of the Board of Public Works. We have decided to, in the interest of saving money and reducing the size of government, to meet only as a two-person Board of Public Works today. For all of you who are listening at home, rest assured that is not true. That is a little bit of levity to start the morning. Our comptroller is, yes, constitutional change. Our comptroller is traveling. And so speaking on behalf of the comptroller today with opening comments will be Treasurer Nancy Cobb.
I can't do that. No, I know the comptroller's out of the country briefly, sends his regards. We'll be back very soon. I would just like to open by thanking Governor, member of the Lieutenant Governor's staff, I believe, Assunta Chang-Smith, who escorted us over to Aberdeen, to the Proving Ground. Last week we did a BRAC tour, members of the State Treasurer's Office, to get some idea, before we talked to the bond rating agencies, of how BRAC was going and actually be able to see it, feel it, touch it, and it was overwhelming. You can read the numbers, but to really see where those thousands of people are coming in and the quality of jobs, the quality of the laboratories, the quality of the new construction, and the work in this instance of what the state and Harford County are doing with the infrastructure, the schools, the transportation, is really overwhelming. If any of you haven't gone out there and really seen what the changes are, I urge you to do it, because it's a whole new world, and I just wanted to publicly thank her staff for putting that together for us. We did meet telephonically with the bond rating agencies after that. They were very interested in it. They, of course, know the numbers, but they keep asking what the impact is going to be, and we were able to tell them millions of dollars in good jobs that are coming in. We will be hearing from them very soon before we go to the market on July 28th, and I would like to thank Secretary Foster, his lock-ins, and the representatives of the Comptroller's Office, too, Jerry, if you'd extend who participated in that call. We thought it went very well. I must say I was on the telephone in California, but it sounded, at least over the phone lines, that things went quite well. We look forward to seeing the conclusion of that happy post-4th of July.
And those BRAC jobs, I mean, sometimes what goes uncounted in those jobs are the 21,000 jobs for the Joint Cyber Command that was only recently announced very quietly at 4:30 p.m. on a Friday, that's going to be coming to Fort Meade. With that announcement, we are now, as Marylanders, with NIH, with Fort Detrick, with Aberdeen, with Fort Meade and the Cyber Command, we are without a doubt sitting in the epicenter of an innovation corridor in science, security, and technology unlike any in our country, with not only tremendous hope for discovering the solutions to the big challenges which confront us as a planet and as a country, but also the daily opportunity of more and more job creation in jobs that cannot be sent offshore if only we can keep pace with the talent level, the skill levels required of our people in order to fill those jobs. I'm going to be going to the National Governors Association in Boston this week, and I tell you, as I look around the eyes of those men and women, there are quite a few that would love to be able to trade places with our economy. And so we have a tremendous challenge here as Marylanders. In times of adversity, we don't make excuses, we make progress, and you see that happening with BRAC, with science, with security, with technology. And so anyway, it's very exciting times. We're joined by Greg Todd, who is County Administrator for Queen Anne's County. Greg, where are you? Mr. Todd, thanks for being here. Let's go to the Secretary's agenda. And how about item number 8? Mr. Todd, you want to tell us which one you're here for? Make sure you tell the County Commissioners we took you first.
Commissioner Rance will be happy to hear that. Thank you, Governor and Treasurer. I'm here for the, it's the Frisk King and easement that the Federal Ranch Land Protection money is going forward that we're working with Eastern Pro Land Conservancy on.
It's not item number eight.
It's number nine. Eight and nine. There are actually.
I think we have a TOS one on there, too. So.
Browns Branch Farm.
Oh, yes. Browns Branch Farm.
And Frisco King is number nine.
These are both projects that we're working with Eastern Shore Land Conservancy on. Eastern Shore Land Conservancy received some federal transportation dollars a few years ago to buy up easements along the 213 Scenic Byway in Queen Anne's County, Kent County, and Cecil County. And the Browns Branch is their first easement purchase in Queen Anne's County. And the commissioners are helping with that. The county is actually fronting the money for that, and then we'll get reimbursed through the SHA funds for that. So we're excited about that one. That's an easy one for us.
What river is that on?
That one is on, it's on the head of Southeast Creek. That's where Browns Branch is.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and Southeast Creek runs into the Chester.
Was that just south of the,
it's
okay, I see.
Yeah, it's just north of Churchill.
Gotcha.
Head north of Churchill. And then the second one is item number nine in your book, is the Fritz King property that is also in the northern part of the county on 213. And this is a project, it was slated for development, some fairly intense development outside of the growth area. They've gone back and taken another look at it, and Eastern Shore Land Conservancy, along with the commissioners who passed a critical farms ordinance a few months ago, has enabled the commissioners to help fund the project to buy the development rights off of it. So with combination of federal ranch land protection monies and then commissioners' monies through some recordation tax increases that were put in place about a year ago that were specifically designed for the purchase of development rights, we'll be able to keep that farm preserved in perpetuity. It went from, I think, about 210 lots down to three. So we're excited about that one. So those are the two in Queen Anne's County today.
That's great.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I am told, sir, to ask about your recent graduate degree.
Well, thank you. And yes, I finished my MBA just about a month ago. I appreciate that. I'm not sure who told you to ask that. Could have been Chip, possibly.
That's
So thank you, Chip. Thanks.
Congratulations.
Okay, any other questions on the Secretary's agenda? Hearing none, Treasurer moves approval, seconded by yours truly. All in favor, signal by saying aye. All opposed? Controller votes no.
No.
Carries. The ayes have it. We're moving on now to program open space.
Good morning, Governor, Treasurer. Department of Resources Program Open Space agenda offers four items today, two Program Open Space items and two World Legacy items. Be happy to take any questions you might have on these items.
Excuse me. They look good. I think it's a good time to be taking advantage of land prices to protect the bay.
Okay. Any other questions in program open space? What's the best one in your hit parade today?
The best one is probably the acquisition in Anne Arundel County. It's a continuation of a acquisition on the South River Greenway. We have Mr. Ken Alvin here today, if you'd like to know some more about that. I believe recently the comptroller had gone out to the site of one of the acquisitions and had made a brief tour of it. The county is making a long-term commitment, it appears, through their program of the space funds to protect the South River as best they can. And as the treasurer has said, taking advantage of the somewhat depressed market, it's a good time to be buying land for conservation.
If there were ever three rivers that could really use some rainscaping, geo-design, and some tackling of that septic incursion, it's these three rivers. I mean, you're
correct.
The stormwater runoff and the septic is really killing these beautiful rivers. So I'm glad we're protecting the South River. And hopefully more to come.
more on next generation. Any other questions?
Well, the other thing, I do have to say that I'm one of the many millions of birders on the East Coast, and I know some.
I know you were a birder.
Yes, and actually, some of this is very, very important to preserve the
flyway.
Yeah.
The raptors.
Yeah.
And it's all very squarely good. Within the green print.
Great. All right, Treasurer moves approval, seconded by yours truly. All favors, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. We move on now to the Department of Budget and Management. T, Eloise Foster. The T stands for Tough Choices.
Governor, good morning. Madam Treasurer, good morning. There are five items on the Department of Budget and Management's agenda for today. I'd like to withdraw item 4, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions?
I'm just curious about number one, the Benthic.
The Benthic survey?
Benthic survey.
Is there anybody here that can talk about the Benthic survey?
We have Tom Parham. He's the director of the Tidewater Ecosystem Assessment Unit. And this is just a contract that provides technical assistance to help them track the state's progress toward meeting the bay restoration goals.
Yes, good morning. I'm Tom Parham, Director of Tidewater Ecosystem Assessment. Good morning, Treasurer, Governor. This item is a services contract to provide monitoring for our benthic sampling to help understand what's going on in Maryland's portion of the Chesapeake Bay. This is a 5-year contract for a little over $1 million, $1,027,950,000. And each year that it runs from about somewhere between $190,000 to about $220,000 over the years. It is a we have 20% MBE participation, and the benefit to the state, why this is in the best interest of the state, is it's required by the Clean Water Act, and it's used to assess impaired waters. So this information is specifically used to determine the health of the bay and whether we meet the requirements by the Clean Water Act. It's also used as a core component for the Chesapeake Bay report card, and it's also used through the Chesapeake Bay program. They have a bay barometer which looks at the health of all the components of the bay's waters.
So what sort of measures? This is to show trends over time.
Yes.
What sort of measures are used?
Tom, well, can you pull up? Excuse me, I'm sorry. Can you pull up the BayStat website on the current health?
That's a great question. What they do is they look at stats and trends of when they go out to these areas. They sample the sediment in the bottom, so they look at the clams and the worms, the shrimp, all the organisms that are on the bottom. And depending on how many there are, the different types, they can tell how healthy the bottom is.
Okay. And do they ever use this in sync with other chemical, physical indices?
Absolutely. It's totally integrated with the water quality monitoring that you'll see some of the results on BayStat. That's used also for this report card and through quality assessment. So we know what's going on. We have stats and trends of what's happening on the bottom of the bay, what's happening in the water column, whether it's the algal community or whether it's the nutrients in the water. And it helps us track progress towards meeting our restoration goals. And so we know what happens on land. We can see perceived results in
the
water.
That was my next question.
Okay.
So you can really see the whole story.
Yes. And this monitoring program has been in place since 1984. So we have this excellent long-term record that allows us to see changes over time that aren't despite changes in weather, dry years, and wet years, you can see when we're making improvements.
That's very interesting.
Hello, BayStat.
Howard was reminding me when we went out with the Rachel Carson with OMSIS, all these different components and different agencies that are measuring in their own way, we're getting insight in their own way into the health of the water and the surrounding buffers. I mean, it's interesting this comes right after the open space and easement
No, it's great.
Do you want to hit on current health, would you, Tom? See the box up there, far hand left column, as you look at it, right beneath the sailboats?
Yeah.
Here we go. Now go to the bottom. Is there any way you can blow up that box? I mean, that's part of your... Thank you.
So...
There's a biotic index, right? And there's a water quality index. And then you put the two of those together for the Bay Health Index. And one portion of the biotic index is the grasses, right?
Mm-hmm.
Another portion of the biotic index is the organisms
put
in
the
water.
But that's
then,
this one?
No, then the third portion of it, the one furthest to the left, is the benthic index, which measures the critters that are actually in the bottom.
That's correct.
Right? Yes. Okay, and so this survey is to allow us to track over time in a reliable way what is the condition of that bottom where that key indicator is concerned, right?
Absolutely.
And then you see where it spans from red to green. The rivers at the top in the green end of the spectrum are the healthiest according to the benthic index, the biotic index, also the water quality. And the ones to the left are the most, severely impacted and unhealthy. Among them would be the Patapsco on the far left, I do believe, followed by the Severn in the south and the others, and then some are in the middle. Click on the stream health, would you, Tom? Go back one. Go up to the top. See up on the right-hand side? There we go, stream health. This is a new website that we just launched that also... allows us, that last one showed a snapshot of all the tributaries, major tributaries in the bay and their relative health to one another. Click on the interactive map, would you, Tom? This is stream health, which allows us to go down to a sort of creek by creek, stream by stream basis. So not only your major tributaries, the Chester and the Severn and the South, but allows us to go into things like whatever that, what was that creek? Was it the South Creek that was on the last one? And if you could go hone down, pull that interactive map down to the middle, a little bit, center it, go up. There we go. And let me show you. For some reason, we're having trouble getting into the interactive map. But inside this interactive map, top right. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. The green one. The green one in the center. We're not really in the interactive map. We're just in the menu that shows you how to use the interactive map. Which, of course, since we're skipping, we'll have to go back to. Okay, good. Now it starts to pull.
Now I think I can do it from here.
See what happens when the controller goes away? All this spontaneity.
So anyway, that's one portion of our map, sort of northwest of Baltimore County. Each of those dots shows you places that are part of the stream surveys in these things. And I assume that this will then also be populated with the latest on these benthic surveys.
It'll be incorporated, yes. This is for the stream part. But ultimately, we're working for something that's a little bit more comprehensive, so you can look at from, you know, what you do on the land, what happens in the streams, and as it goes downstream towards the bay, so you can see the whole picture together.
And basically, this the simple sort of red light, green light, yellow light shows you the relative health of these bodies. There's also a way that you can click on and see these. Watersheds, that would be Loch Raven. Is that Loch? No, that's not Loch Raven. Loch Raven Reservoir is off to the right, just to orient you up in the corner. And the other one is what is the other reservoir? Is it Pretty Boy?
Pretty Boy.
Pretty Boy. Click on the right hand side, has the relative. Hold on. That's telling me, what does it read off there, Tom?
Streams, forests, buffers, impervious surfaces, watershed.
Hit watershed. Please. So that shows you in color fashion sort of the relative health of those watersheds and where they're impaired, where they're not impaired. Now, the other thing that we've been able to do, thanks to the good people at GIS and our IT czar, Elliot Schlanger, and good people like Ken over at DNR and MDE, is we've been able to identify the biggest concentrations of impervious surface within these watersheds. So click on the one that says impervious surface, and then that shows you. You might even go down to a deeper level. I mean, take the map in. That's a higher level. Go down a little deeper, and you can see where they start to pop out. As, and then increasingly, you could overlay that with aerial photography and see that, well, that's a mall that was constructed in the 1960s before we knew that giant dead zones like this kill everything south of them in the stream or the river, including the benthic life, the biotic life, and the fish life. And
so once you do this for all, could you actually run scenarios with planning, like if we said no to mall here that had housing, or said no to housing that had some other sort of development, what the likely impact on the...
That's an excellent question. Actually, for it kind of goes beyond this site and sort of this monitoring program through work with the federal government in order to reduce the nutrients on the state of Maryland and the whole Bay watershed so we have a cleaner and healthier Bay. They have these models, and essentially they'll look at the land use on all these different areas. And if you have... a farm field, or if you have a residential area, they all have different amounts of nutrients that run off. So if you have more malls, more impervious surfaces, the governor's talking about, you have more runoff and different values. So when you put all those pieces together, you get a composite, and you can look at this area right here may have more nutrients, more, this may cause more problems for the Bay as opposed to this area right here. So the choices we make on the land have a big impact of the health of the Bay's waters.
So it's even going beyond. We used to always talk about point versus non-point. You actually can get it.
Yeah, point sources is what's coming out of a wastewater treatment plant or end of a pipe. Non-point sources, anything that can be from atmospheric deposition, whatever runs off the land that doesn't come off a pipe. So these impervious surfaces, this is exactly the sort of things.
And in the same way that the BayStat website shows you by the 10 major watersheds within the state, I mean, conceivably, where we hope this goes is that you can get down into these minor watersheds, creek sheds, stream sheds. And National Geographic is running this online program to help teachers teaching environmental literacy and environmental sciences so that the kids can see where is the impervious surface and see the correlation between the concrete dead zones and the life of the stream as it passes through their school, and go on kind of a deductive, or is that inductive, go figure out why it is that the stream has less life south of this point than it does north, and the impervious surface can guide. And similarly, if we're able to do, as increasingly we must, retrofits of these giant asphalt parking lots, put pervious pavers in, and rain gardens and rainscaping so that we contain more of it, there's, you know, the hope that, and the real likelihood that we see the streams start to rebound, provided we're not moving the escalator the other way by other things.
And then ultimately the Bay.
We need to get our hearts out of the dead zone and get our hands in the streams.
Exactly.
That was fun.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I'm glad you asked.
That's great. Very interesting.
All right. Any other matters on the budget and management?
I did have – is this where the contract was for the H1N1?
Yeah.
Well, I just wondered – I mean, I read the stuff here, but –
A5 and A6. Do you
want to
come up second?
I'm sorry.
We're accepting the reports, but now you can ask questions.
I mean, I gather that all over, including Maryland, we were disappointed at the participation in the
One of the challenges that Maryland and other jurisdictions faced with the H1N1 immunization program was that the take-up rates in minority communities was not what we would like.
Or non-minority communities,
too. Well, overall, Maryland's performance was above the national average in terms of the percentage of the population that received the H1N1 vaccine. But where we saw considerable variation within the state, in particular, was a poor take-up rate in minority communities. And so we engaged in an emergency fashion because we wanted to have answers in advance of the fall immunization campaign, an opportunity to understand what some of those barriers are by engaging a series of firms to do some focus group evaluation.
So we assume that this will prepare us the next time.
It'll help us work on understanding what the barriers are, what the reasons were. There are certainly a lot of speculation, but also to help us and prepare then with what appropriate messaging will be, so that when we reach out to communities, how best to do that and what are the appropriate ways to identify and describe risk to the populations of not getting immunization. Now, for many reasons, there are historic concerns that members of minority communities have about what they perceive to be experimental procedures. Now, the vaccine is not one. It is a well-proven technique, but we need to do a better job in addressing health disparities overall, and this is one particular area.
And understanding the historic and the cultural context within which we operate. So do you have a map that shows this?
I don't know if I can.
Yeah, the county by county in terms of penetration of vaccine?
I know that we have the tables by county. I don't know whether we have it geo-mapped or not.
Yeah, well, let's map and see the demographics, and then that'll the next time this happens, and no doubt there will be a next time sometime.
Right.
Or something like this happens. We know where we need to channel our communication efforts and where, if we have limited resources, where we need to shift our communications efforts.
Right. Well, it is clear from the tables that we have seen that the jurisdictions with the highest proportion of minority populations were the ones that we had the most struggle in getting the immunization levels up. Part of it is making sure that we're working well with the school systems. One of the ways in which you can get that those numbers up, and we did see that in a number of counties, was where there were far more effective programs in the school system. And that also is getting the parents engaged and involved, because obviously you cannot immunize kids without having the parents permission.
Baltimore City and traditional vaccines has one of the higher vaccination rates of any major city in America.
Yeah, right.
How did they do?
There were challenges there. I'm very happy to note today that the mayor's announcing a new health officer in Baltimore City, somebody who comes from New York City's school system, where she headed the medical program there. And so we're looking for ways of improving the relationship between the school system and the health department at the local level and at the state level.
Good.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
I'd like to see a visual representation.
Yeah,
I
message received.
Okay. All right, any other questions? Treasurer moves approval of the Department of Budget Management agenda items, seconded by the Governor Chair. All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. We move on now to
University System
Maryland.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Jim Sterling for the University System. We have 7 items on today's agenda. I'd be happy to address any questions you might have.
Just related somewhat to number one. What's the timing of the rollout of the new physical sciences building?
I don't have the schedule here with me. I mean, as you know, we just did the groundbreaking for phase one of the physical sciences right. complex. And right. It's a couple of year construction.
It's period. A 2 or 3 year?
It's at least 2 years. I will get you the specific schedule and send it back through Howard.
Thanks.
Okay, Treasurer moves approval. Seconded by the Chair. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. We move on now to the Department of Information Technology.
Good morning, Governor. Madam Treasurer.
Good morning.
For the record, L.A. Schlanger, Department of Information Technology. This morning we have two items on the agenda. I'd be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Treasurer moves approval. Seconded by the Chair. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. We move on now to the Department of Transportation. Good morning.
Good morning. We are withdrawing item 27. For the record, item 28 has been previously revised. 23. I'm sorry, what did I say? I thought I said 27.
So we are withdrawing item number 23?
Three, yes.
Okay.
Of the 28 items.
Okay.
And we're available for any questions.
Right. What the, I notice you've got a series on the metro lines, the library lines.
Oh, the yeah,
I was just curious what the status
A&E
of the
A&E work for the purple line and the red
what
line.
What the purple line?
Yeah.
Where are we with the purple line?
We are working with the FTA actually on both of the lines. Red line and the purple line, and responding to their questions, updating any of the data, making sure that we all agree with the ridership projections and those kinds of things. So it's working its way through the FTA process. The next step would be submitting the financial plan, followed by the final alignment documents. So we're progressing through the process.
So, you know, I get calls from former constituents and neighbors about pushing mass transit
to continue the work.
Yeah.
You know, to spend the money that we do have to do the development work.
That's great. That's good. Yeah. However it's done, I mean, something in there hopefully will both help with the BRAC influx and just get people east-west.
The
governor remembers when East-West Highway, or maybe this was before your time, actually was the only East-West Highway when I first moved to the Washington area, right before the Beltway opened.
Right.
And if we don't do something, it's not going to be moving anywhere.
I don't remember a world before Beltway.
No. 1963.
1963 was when my consciousness
began. Right.
But you're correct. Bethesda is very interested in all the many expansions and versions of Metro to serve that facility.
We're moving forward, not back.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is that the message?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks.
Anything else on transportation items?
Mm-hmm.
Treasurer moves approval. Seconded by the Chair. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move now to the Department of General Services.
Good morning, Governor and Treasurer. The Department of General Services has 20 items on our agenda. We are withdrawing item 15 CGL, and I'll be glad to answer any questions you might have on any of these items. Governor, I might note that out of the construction and maintenance items we have today, we have creating 70 jobs to add to the economy here in Maryland.
Great.
With $430,000 out of $1.9 million in total spend on those items.
That's great. We have had a rate of job creation over these last 3 months, which is twice what the national rate of job creation is. We've had 3 months in a row of positive job creation. And we've held on to our private job base better than all but four other states this last year, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Any other questions? Yes. Department of General Services?
No, but I wish, and we should send that news on to the rating agencies. And that's good. I mean, we can just get a little paragraph on that.
Yeah, those three. 3 months in a row, massive job, Greg.
Yeah.
Wrote twice the creation rate of the nation over these 3 months, and according to Bureau of Labor Statistics, we've held on to our private job base better than all but four other states in the union over this last year.
That's good.
I'm a font of information.
Yeah, yeah. The Rockville Courthouse.
Yes, ma'am.
How are we doing with that?
We're doing very well there on a beautiful project. We are scheduled to complete late December. We're on schedule, and it's a beautiful facility. It's coming together well.
It's very good.
And it's big.
It's yes.
Huge. It'd be nice to have it done and completed.
Agreed.
Tiny little spot.
Yep.
Where I used to do my homework after riding the T6 home from high school.
Well, no room for homework now. Number 18.
Number 18,
CGL.
Do we have?
That is to deal with the Maryland Theater in Hagerstown, Washington County. We were expecting, they're here. Please come up. We're expecting Mr. Ron Bowers and Sam Young to join us this morning. So you were here.
Hey, Ron, come on up, Mr. Bowers. No, both of you, come on up. You drove a long way. We just want to hear from you.
We appreciate that.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I didn't know you were waiting out there. We might have tried to take you early so you could get home.
No problem. We just appreciate your time.
So tell us about this.
Over the past year, well, let me back up another step. We're celebrating our 95th anniversary with the Maryland Theater. We're planning a gala event in September, which you will be receiving invitations to. And during the past year or so, we've been working with the county and trying to take care of some improvements throughout the theater. Obviously, being 95 years old, there's plenty of places that you can spend money to make improvements, keep the building updated, repairs. It's a lot of plaster work in the theater. If you turn to the third page in, which is a kind of the beige color here, and you see that we've currently spent roughly $259,000 over the past year or so, the major portion of that being a roof replacement. And we currently have an additional $41,000 in projected projects that we would like to complete in the theater as well. In addition, we've also recently put together some square foot numbers going down the road a little bit later, doing a historically accurate plaster restoration within the theater, and that would be an additional $250,000. One of the main purposes of our gala event is a fundraiser. We're hoping to generate funds through that, and we're going to be following up over the next 5 years toward our 100th anniversary with annual fundraising events, all going toward capital improvements within the theater.
And where is the theater located?
21 to 23 South Potomac Street in Hagerstown.
Mm-hmm. And how old is it?
95 years.
Wow.
Thomas Lamb was the architect.
Pardon?
Thomas Lamb was the architect of the theater.
It's beautiful.
I had the opportunity, thanks to these gentlemen and Dr. Morgan and some others, to visit Hagerstown last month.
Dr. Morgan's on our board.
Yes, I saw that she was, and it's one of the high points was to see the theater, the organ. It really is an amazing. I had rather thought that O'Malley's March might have played or played there. It's a great. It's a great stage. I mean, it really is a beautiful. I can't get over how terrifically well Hagerstown, the work in Hagerstown is going, particularly educational.
Yes.
I'm
The Barbara Ingram School.
Barbara Ingram School, the other schools, the Museum of Fine Arts. I mean, it's just really terrific, and I bet the weather is even a little better there.
It's still pretty hot.
Is the Barbara Ingram School close in proximity to
yes.
the what?
Yes, right next to the theater.
Okay.
In fact,
so that's the symbiotic kind of, you have a
performing arts
campus there, huh?
Yes, sir. We are partnering with them on various events right
you
now.
You let the school use it? You don't think they can build their own theater?
They do have a black box theater, but they, for a larger venue, they do use us as well.
Great. Mm-hmm. Well, that is one of the very few. You know, back in 2004, we passed the bill that to try to allow school systems to use more flexible forms of financing and funding. And this is the very first one that's gone, you know, beyond the usual kind of comfort zone of how we've always done it on school construction. And this was what, you had a nonprofit that built it, and then you did sort of a leaseback arrangement with the nonprofit entity that built it. And you're to be commended for the innovation and for delivering the results for the kids who are only going to be in high school once.
Governor, we're very fortunate at the Maryland Theater, being 95 years, as to being in the black. We're not in the red. And the good thing about it is we're not far, but we do manage to keep good programming. And I think when you were there, Dr. Morgan, being our nation's number one school superintendent, right, representing Maryland and Washington County, she adds a lot to the board and brings a lot from the diversity of the Barbara Ingram School for the Art in the theater. And it's a great relationship.
Well, I wish you well. I'm glad to see this going so well. It's very exciting. Next, you've got to get the one across the street.
You can hold on to the booklets if you'd like. There's pictures in there of some of the renovation work we've done as well towards the back.
Towards the back.
And the new roof that was on the theater is a new green roof, so everything we're doing is green friendly.
Wow. Green roof.
It's
on
white,
a 95-year-old... From a 95-year-old theater, you're able to do a green roof?
Yes.
And structurally, it holds it, huh?
It holds it.
It's not the green, meaning it's an energy star. It's
okay.
The roof,
I see.
Yeah, we don't mow grass.
Gotcha.
It won't cave in.
All right. Well, look, thanks very, very much.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Any other on general services? How many jobs are going to be working on that?
Well, there were 14 jobs working on it for a long period of time. We did lobbying and last year worked on that to create jobs.
Great. Okay. Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the chair. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. And this concludes our meeting of the Board of Public Works. Thanks very much.